on, and this is another socially distant edition of KBIA's News of the News. I'm Amy Simons, coming to you from the studio in the Reynolds Journalism Institute. My colleagues Ernest Perry and Kathy Kiley are with me, as always, for our weekly conversation on media behaviors. Hi to you, Ernest. A good Wednesday.
Good Wednesday to you, Amy.
And Kathy, good to have you here with us today, too.
Yes, it's nice to be in warm company in such cold weather.
Yes, it is. On our program this week, Fox dumps one of its biggest stars, canceling Lou Dobbs's Fox Business program with little warning. A coincidence, given that Smartmatic slapped the network with a $2.7 billion defamation suit the following day. MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell's three-hour documentary, Absolute Proof, ran on the One America Network. We're going to talk about OAN's 90-second disclaimer and why some are saying the film is an invitation for Dominion to file suit next. And some high-profile departures at the New York Times. We're going to talk about who left and why. There's a lot more, hopefully, that we'll get to before the half hour is up. But let's start with the second impeachment trial of Donald Trump. Yesterday's opening statement included a video that Jamie Raskin introduced showing what led to that meeting that started yesterday. There were other videos shown during the proceedings today. These are each montages of the images, the sounds, the tweets, the words of the then president egging on those who took over the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. These videos, these images were raw, they were violent, and they were a stark reminder. What stunned me, though, was, Kathy, they were running it on daytime TV, uncensored and unedited, live as it was happening, and even into the evening news. Again, those swear words, which would not be legal to use on TV, they wouldn't pass the indecency test, being aired without any kind of editing.
Well, first of all, let's face it, with cable news and cable television, it's not like these words have never been heard before by many ears. But I think this is news. It is raw, and it is, but this is historic, and I think you have to show it as it is. It's important, and so I don't have a problem with it. I think viewers need to see what happened.
Ernest, talk for a minute about that historic aspect and not editing it. We know that in the past there have been, I mean, we can look at the Vietnam War and how the graphic nature of those images during nightly newscasts really changed opinions. Could you see that happening the same way today, or are we kind of past some of those sensibilities?
Well, I mean, we really won't know until everything is out. And even then, you have to give, you know, you have to give it time to sort of go into the blogosphere and into social media and into history is probably the best way to put it, to be able to determine what people are going to think about it. But I do have to agree with Kathy that if the American public, if this is a trial that is taking place in the Senate, but and the jurors are there and they're the senators are representatives of the American public, and we all need to see exactly what the evidence shows. What I'm hoping is, and I think we're starting to see that, is the facts of the case are going to be out there. And this impeachment, as opposed to former President Trump's first impeachment, I think is going to be starkly different in that the public will be able to actually see what's going on and be able to have a better understanding, because there won't be as many nuances in this as there was in the whole Ukrainian and Russian investigation and those sorts of things.
Yeah, and the other thing is, Ernest raises a really good point. I mean, the jurors officially are the senators, but I think in many ways the audience that the impeachment managers are trying to reach is the public. You know, this is really going to put members of the Senate on record about which side they're on. And if you think Democrats aren't going to use that in the 2022 elections, you know, it's going to be an issue. And I think, it is political in a sense, but I think it is also historic. It's really asking members of the Senate, is this the kind of thing you'll tolerate? without any kind of repercussions.
Okay. We're going to be watching this, and some of the estimates I know that I've seen and heard is that we will likely, by the time we have this meeting of the three of us again next week, have a better sense of where this is going to go. Fox has unceremoniously dumped one of its biggest names, Lou Dobbs. It seemed like a pretty big shock to have his show canceled and for the network to distance itself from him until the next day when it became public that the election tech firm Smartmatic slapped the network with a $2.7 billion, that's with a B, dollar defamation lawsuit. And Dobbs was one of the hosts that was specifically named in that suit. Now, the reasons for the split haven't been explicitly stated, but Kathy, it doesn't seem like such a big leap that there's a connection here, does it?
No, and in fact, it's not a surprise that Smartmatic filed that suit. I mean, they had been signaling for weeks that they were about to do that. And Dobbs is one of several anchors who had to air these really weird, stilted segments a couple of weeks ago that kind of walked back statements they had made about Smartmatic and Dominion, another voting technology firm. And but they didn't really apologize. So I think this is another temporizing measure on the part of Fox. They're throwing one guy over the rail, but not all of their anchors. They're not apologizing. I think they're trying to walk a line that ultimately I don't think this is going to work. You either have to take back the words that Smartmatic says are libelous and slanderous, or you have to go fight it out in court. This just seems a half measure that's not going to work.
So Fox has filed a motion to dismiss the suit, claiming that it has a First Amendment right to inform the public on irregularities with the election. Now, these are irregularities that have been shown not to exist. Ernest, Smartmatic would have to prove actual malice here, right?
Yeah, they would have to prove actual malice. However, you know, I don't think that they're just fighting this in court. They're also fighting this in the court of public opinion. Mm-hmm. They are trying to not only save their company, they're trying to save their reputation, which has been besmirched by all of, you know, by the allegations that were put out there about their voting machines and the not working and the irregularities. And the fact that they have made a decision, and they're not the only ones. I mean, you have others who have gone out there as well who are doing the same thing. These companies have chosen to fight back, and they're going to fight back in the courts. But they also want to either they're going for a settlement, which in some cases I don't necessarily think they are, or they're going for an actual battle in a courtroom where they can save their reputations and say, look, this is what we said. We are here to certify and secure the vote of the American public, and that is what we did. And these media companies and their personalities besmirched our name, and we are going to fight back.
Yeah, and I think, yeah. I mean, as First Amendment advocate, I really hate to see these kind of lawsuits filed against media companies, but I really think some of these media companies are responsible for bringing this day about. I mean, what these lawsuits are trying to do is get the companies to regulate their speech and to do what media companies traditionally have done, which is hew to some sort of standards of accuracy. One of these companies that was, you know, slandered as having stolen the election only operated in Los Angeles County, which, hello, doesn't generally vote Republican anyway. So, I mean, the charges that were brought here are so wildly out of line that I think these companies are forced to go to court to save their reputations. That's what the courts are for. I hate to see it happening, but that's what these companies are trying to do to get their reputations back. And even though they are public companies, I think courts are going to be more sympathetic than you might expect, because things have just gotten so out of hand in terms of wild allegations being thrown around by media organizations.
So before we get go ahead, Ernest, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I think the other point that Kathy makes is that, you know, you're talking about the courts. If these are jury trials and you have the media on trial, and the reputation that the media has now, I mean, I do think that the media companies themselves stand to lose in this, because they had an opportunity, and in the court and the juries may say an obligation to stop some of this, and they didn't do that.
So we're going to talk about another one of these cases in a second. But before we move on from Fox, I want to talk about the choice. Kathy, you had mentioned when we first started talking about this that there are other anchors involved here and that Dobbs was the man thrown overboard. Talk for a second about why you think Maria Bartiromo or Jeanine Pirro, both also named in this suit, as was Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani, why part ways with Dobbs and not the other two women?
You know, that's a hard one to say. It might be that he's older. His ratings were very good, though. So maybe the thinking was you give the big guy up and it'll call off the dogs. I really don't know. I'd be speculating. But I do think that it won't be enough. And I think, to the point Ernest just made, for media companies, as soon as the lawsuit's filed, win or lose, the meter starts running, and it's going to cost Fox big in lawyer fees for this. So I just don't think, I think they were trying to put a stop to this. He's a big name. Dobbs is a big name. Maybe they thought that this was a way of stopping the lawsuit, but I don't think that's going to happen.
So the One America News Network, OAN, it doesn't seem to want to find itself in that same spot.
Michael James Lindell has purchased the airtime for the broadcast of this program on One America News Network. Mr. Lindell is the sole author and executive producer of this program and is solely and exclusively responsible for its content.
Now, that was the first 15 seconds of a 90-second disclaimer. Yeah, a minute and a half that the network played before running Absolute Proof, the three-hour documentary that Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, produced. And it was full of claims of election fraud against another election tech company, Dominion. Now, Ernest, we tell our students that throwing the word allegedly in front of a claim isn't enough to protect you. What about this paid programming disclosure? Is that going to actually accomplish anything?
No, I don't think it's going to accomplish much at all. I think that just throwing allegedly in front of it, or a 15-second disclaimer, or 90-second disclaimer is not going to matter much, because as we talked about, I think it was last week's show, Dominion was one of the first companies to fight back against these allegations that its equipment led to this so-called stealing of the election, as Trump and his supporters put it. And so I don't think that this three-hour, I don't even know if you can call it a documentary or whatever it is he wants to call it.
How about we can agree it was an infomercial?
It was an infomercial. This three-hour infomercial is going to be saved from a lawsuit by Dominion because of the allegations that it is putting out there.
So, Kathy, some have described this programming, infomercial, documentary, whichever term we choose to want to use here, that it is nothing more than an invitation to sue. And I wanted to try to see if I could find some clips, but it has actually been pulled down from YouTube, from Vimeo, from most available streaming sites because of the level of misinformation and mischaracterizations of Dominion's work.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really kind of the toxic side of the internet here. As we've talked about before, internet providers have, since the 1990s, had a special protection against libel that legacy media companies haven't. Now you're seeing, I don't know whether OAN is going to try to claim that they are an internet provider, and so they have protections here, but you're seeing even in Fox, these more legacy, more traditional media companies trying to grab the same audience that the internet can get. And really, you're trying to pander to an audience that wants to believe in untruths. And what OAN is trying to do here is have it both ways. They want to say, yes, we want the audience, we want the eyeballs, but we're going to tell you, oh, we don't necessarily believe this ahead of time before we take the money for the 3-hour infomercial, as you put it.
Yeah. We have been talking about what comes next. Where will the far right turn for their news and information as we see apparent splits among conservatives? And I wanted to ask you for your hot take on some news that came out in dribs and drabs last week, that Bill Shine is working deep behind the scenes at News Nation, the new national nightly news program on WGN America. Kathy, your thoughts on this, given his involvement in the past with Fox News, with the Trump administration, and now coming out several months after his contracting on with News Nation and WGN America?
You know, it's really surprising. But I think, again, this is an effort. Media companies are trying really hard, and WGN's newscast particularly, to say, we're down the line, we want to appeal to both sides. And I guess this is a way to try to do that. But I think it's, you know, I assume that what they're trying to do is they think Bill Shine somehow has a pipeline to how to get people on the right to watch their television show. But it just seems to be a really misguided effort on their part.
Within the newsroom, there has been a lot of consternation, a lot of disappointment in this. Ernest, I see you nodding your head too. Sandy Poudar, the news director who had helped create News Nation, finding out just last week that a product that she had been so instrumental in creating, that he was providing input behind the scenes, and she abruptly walked out the door and quit her job.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's happening here is that when Sinclair took over these stations and this started happening, they promoted this show as going to be the straightforward. It wasn't going to take a Fox News angle. It was going to provide conservatives with almost say, if you're a social conservative, yeah, if you're a moderate conservative, then this was going to be the network for you. And that's not necessarily what's happening. When you allow someone like Shine to come into your organization, then you run the risk of moving more toward that sort of Fox News pundit kind of news take.
Well, and News Nation and WGN is owned by Nextstar. So in a lot of ways, this was almost the competition, or being seen as the competition, as while on cable in most markets, Nextstar owning stations in almost as many markets as Sinclair does, kind of right, a straight on competitive move to Sinclair, and kind of the bad press it has kind of received over the course of the last few years with its must runs and some of its very right-leaning and controversial programming that came from corporate. Kathy, you look like you were just about to say something.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, I think, let's face it, Fox really was very successful at building an audience. They were so successful that people on the left, like MSNBC, has turned into a much more ideological broadcasting outlet now, because they clearly saw that there was a successful formula there. Broadcasting more biased or tilted news, you know, really pandering to an audience. And I think maybe that's what WGN is trying to do here, is say, well, let's get that magic formula. Here's somebody who knows the secret sauce. I just don't know that you can beat Fox at their own game.
Okay. This week marked two notable departures from the New York Times, both the result of past events. Andy Mills, the creator and co-host of Caliphate, he resigned, saying past accusations of inappropriate behavior toward female colleagues while a public radio producer made staying at the Times too difficult. Those accusations became known during the investigation into Caliphate that we've talked about over the past few months. The other is Donald McNeil Jr. Kathy, tell us a little bit about what's led to his departure, because it's not really connected in any way to his primary work at the Times.
Yeah, this is really surprising. Donald McNeil is a star reporter, and not only is he a star reporter at the Times, he is a star reporter, or was a star reporter, covering the hottest story going right now. He is the Times expert on infectious diseases. He wrote a book and really broke the story about the Zika virus, and now is very involved, or has been very involved, in the Times coverage of COVID. And so for him to leave at this point is really kind of a surprise. And what triggered this was things he said on a trip where he was kind of a speaker, squiring high school students around. It was sponsored by the Times. And it was alleged that he used the N-word, used racially inappropriate language. And what was interesting about this to me was that initially the Times defended him and said, you know, well, it was there's some doubt about whether he used the word in context, meaning he was using the word to respond to a student's concerns, or did he use this in a gratuitous way? And and the Times kind of did a 180. Initially, they defended him, but then they turned around after people inside the newspaper protested the lack of punishment. And so it's a puzzler. He's a highly respected reporter, and I'm actually really interested in what Ernest thinks.
Ernest, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think this is one of those where, you know, I was reading the Eric Wimple blog from the Washington Post before the show here about it, and he made up a very good point. If this was a legal case, it would be thrown out because of double jeopardy. But there's no double jeopardy in this particular realm, because this story was leaked to the Daily Beast a year after, almost a year and a half after it actually occurred. And the New York Times had already supposedly dealt with this. But then when the story was leaked and other reporters and editors within the New York Times heard about it, they came out and said, wait a minute, you know, there are other instances in which he has been involved in either saying something derogatory or acting sort of disrespectful to members of the New York Times news staff in discriminatory ways and that sort of thing. And something needs to be done about this. We can't just allow this sort of reprimand to happen without making it public and doing something publicly. And that's when the editors, I mean, the main editors and the publisher and others came out and said, okay, you know, you got a choice. Either you can leave willingly or we're going to let you go. And this is where we are now.
Go ahead. Yeah, I think that one of the puzzling things here is that the Times really hasn't been particularly transparent on this. And so it left an open question of, is this a case of a repeated offender, or is this the case of overreaction and cancel culture? And what's interesting about this is PEN America, which is a very, very respected organization, came out and issued a press release in McNeil's defense. So it really left a lot of questions there. And I think at a time of tremendous sensitivity, I think when we are so polarized, it would serve better if the Times were a little more open about what happened and why they did what they did and why they changed their minds.
Okay, before
I have one more point.
Okay, go ahead.
If there needs to be a set process and policy for dealing with this and how you're going to respond when this happens. And I think that's part of the problem. I mean, you need to leave yourself some broad parameters by which to operate through it. But the problem with all of these news organizations is that they only deal with it in a reactionary way, and they're not being proactive in how they handle issues involving diversity, equity, and inclusion. And until they do that in a more meaningful and I would say more uniform way, they're going to continue to have these problems.
Okay. Before we go today, I want to take a moment to recognize the untimely passing of a treasured sports journalist whose name you may recognize from his bylines covering the Mizzou football team and later the Kansas City Chiefs for the Kansas City Star and for most recently Yahoo Sports. Therese Paylor died yesterday at his home, and it's a loss that we here in the Columbia journalism community are feeling quite deeply, because while he was never associated officially with the Missouri School of Journalism, he was someone who our students got to know very well. He would often guest lecture in my Convergence reporting class. He would take our students under his wing in press boxes, be it at Memorial Stadium or in Kansas City, show them the ropes, help them get through some of their first games that they were covering on the big field, and help mentor them throughout their time here and into their careers as young journalists. So Therese Paylor is going to be somebody who is very deeply missed in the sports journalism community.
He's definitely going to be missed. He got his degree at Howard University, went to the Kansas City Star as a budding journalist, and he learned the ropes, and he learned it starting in the high school ranks and working his way up, which is not necessarily the way it happens these days, but he actually was able to do that. And along the way, he touched a lot of people and a lot of our students, and he's going to be sorely missed.
He is.
And there was a beautiful, really extraordinary column about him and the Kansas City Star, several of them actually by his colleagues. And his personality just jumps out the page. I wasn't lucky enough to get to know him, but I do know his fiance, and our hearts go out to her as well.
And to the entire family. We are just about out of time today. I would like to thank RJI's Travis McMillan for directing today's show, and to Aaron Hay for handling the audio for us. Tim Pilcher composed our original theme music. I'm Amy Simons. We'll be back with you next week for another edition of Views of the News.